Well, good evening. Once again, welcome to everyone and also to our visitors. As was noted in our announcements, on a regular basis, the elders have given the opportunity to different people, different young men in the congregation to present a lesson from time to time, and that's exactly what we'll be doing tonight. If you would, I would like for everyone that has Old Testament available, definitely like for you to have that. We will be reading quite a few passages tonight, flipping through several different things. We're going to be obviously focusing on God's wisdom, and so we'll be reading quite a little bit here. If we're just focusing probably on my wisdom, we'd probably get back to make the full fourth quarter of the Cowboys game tonight, so it wouldn't take very long. Have you ever noticed that people love fame? Just eat it up, and I don't understand it, but TV shows are events where they can see a famous person. They just have a fascination with fame. People absolutely just seem to be eaten up with it. We're going to take that same philosophy tonight and look at a famous person out of the Bible. We're going to be looking at a lot of aspects about King David. Definitely one of the most fascinating people recorded in the Bible, from great things that he did, like becoming a respected war hero at a very young age, to beautiful and soul-searching psalms that he penned, but also to the monumental tragedies of his life. Much is written about David, and since there's much written about David, I assume that means that very intentionally there is much to be learned about David. And so that's where we are. Well, it just so happens to be that as a novice father and currently in training, my focus tonight is actually going to be David as a father. I appreciated Brother Mondin's prayer this evening. He mentioned the fact that we do indeed have several young parents and many young children in this group, and that's a good thing. Parenthood and being a good father and raising God-fearing children is very important to me, and I don't feel alone at all in that. I know that that's obviously the goal of so many here. Well, God gave many instructions to fathers. If we look all the way through the Bible, fairly early on, if we look in Deuteronomy 6, we can see that before the people crossed into the land of Canaan, he gave many instructions. Deuteronomy 6, reading 6 through 9. Instructions to fathers. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts on your house and on your gates. In other words, that's everywhere. Teach your children when they get up, when they go down, when you're going anywhere, when they turn around, there it is. When they turn around again, there it is. Teach and teach and teach. Well, what did David do right? Well, we know, and there's no need to flip to this one right quick, but 1 Kings 11:6 tells us that is a statement made that says that, in speaking of Solomon and making a comparison there, says that he fully followed God. And we know that David made many mistakes, but the statement is made that David fully followed God. If you would, turn with me to 1 Chronicles 28, a passage I would like for us to read. 1 Chronicles 28. Here, David speaking to Solomon. As we think about the things that David did right as a father. 1 Chronicles 28, and we'll read starting in verse 9. As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father and serve him with a loyal heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands all the intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he'll be found by you. But if you forsake him, he'll cast you off forever. Consider now, for the Lord has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it. Skip down to verse 20. David said to his son Solomon, "Be strong and have good courage and do it. Do not fear nor be dismayed, for the Lord God, my God, will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you until you've finished all the work for the service of the house of the Lord." Excellent instruction that he gave to Solomon. What I intended as I started thinking about my general thought for the lesson tonight, I expected that I was going to find so many more passages to turn and find such extreme wisdom coming out of David as he talked with his children, as he instructed his sons. Found a few things, but not what I expected. So let's talk about more of what I did find. David did not excel as a father. And reading these accounts truly did amaze me. You can turn to Deuteronomy chapter 20. The first thing that I would like for us to look at here in the things that David did not do well as a father. Deuteronomy 20. 16 through 18, the instruction from God was given in this. "But of the cities of these peoples, which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance, you shall let nothing that breathes remain alive. You shall utterly destroy them, the Hittite and the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite, just as the Lord your God has commanded you. Lest they teach you to do according to all their abominations, which they have done for their gods, and you sin against the Lord your God." One of the wives of David was named Maacah. She was the daughter of the king of Geshur. Mentioned right in different accounts, specifically of the cities to be utterly wiped out and destroyed. She wasn't just one of the innocent civilians that happened to get caught up in it. She was the daughter of the king. Joshua 13:13 said, "Nevertheless, the children of Israel did not drive out the Geshurites or Maacathites, but the Geshurites and the Maacathites dwell among the Israelites until this day." So one of the first things that David did not do well as a father is he did not marry the women that he should have. He married women that he should not have married. I'll put it that way. Well, we already know another story, very prominent story of a woman that he married, that if you're sitting back and looking at things that should have happened and should not have happened in the way of that God laid out instruction to his people, David should have had no involvement with Bathsheba. We all know that adultery and ultimately murder to cover up this adultery and sin came about and ultimately resulted in the death of a child. Well, let's look at some of the other wives of David, just to mention off. There was Ahinoam, Abigail, Maacah, which we already mentioned, Haggith, Abital, Eglah, and we know Bathsheba as well. There are not many more that are named, but if we look in 2 Samuel 5:13, we see, "And David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he had come from Hebron. Also, more sons and daughters were born to David." We're going to look at one passage, Deuteronomy 17, several times, but I want to go ahead and mention it right now as well. In Deuteronomy 17:17, and the reason that I was throwing that last passage out about him marrying more wives and more concubines, one of the instructions that was given to this people before they even had a king, when the instructions began to come about when you have a king, here's some things that they need to do, and here's what will need to be done. Deuteronomy 17:17, the statement is made, neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. A very clear instruction was given from early on, even way before David's time. Do not increase your wives as king. Despite the instruction from God, David desired and took additional wives. And the next point ties in with this one. From those marriages, from those wives, obviously came children. And David did not instruct his children. Let me ask, to all the parents in the audience, how much of your time and attention do your spouse and children legitimately need? I don't know if I phrased that very well. Your spouse and your children, they need a lot of your time, and it's absolutely right. How much time is that? Come up with some idea. Now, multiply that times 10, or however many wives and children David ended up with. You come to a very quick conclusion. Would one man be able to do all of that? And the answer is no. You can say, well, you could do this. The answer is no. That many wives and that many children, the answer is no. That could not. Then all of their needs for instruction and all of the needs that a husband and father is to fulfill, the answer is no. Oh, and by the way, as king, he still had to lead the nation and judge disputes. Every father only has so much time, but each child still needs a certain amount of time and instruction, regardless of the other expectations that are placed on the father. As we previously read from Deuteronomy 6, fathers were clearly instructed to teach their children what God said every day, during the day, when they laid down, when they rose up. The evidence does not support that David did this very well. If you would, turn to 2 Samuel 13. You can kind of go ahead and stick a marker or your finger in 2 Samuel 13. That's the area where a lot more material will come that we'll be looking at tonight. But the next point is, David did not confront and condemn sin in his household. 2 Samuel 13, story that I'm sure majority of us are very familiar. His son Amnon. Amnon wanted his half-sister Tamar. However, it's important to note that according to Mosaic law, he could not have her. She was his half-sister. Reading from Leviticus 18, here in verse 6, none of you shall approach anyone who is near of kin to him to uncover his nakedness. I am the Lord. Verse 9, the nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father, or the daughter of your mother, whether born at home or elsewhere, their nakedness you shall not uncover. Verse 26, you shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, either any of your own nation or any stranger who dwells among you. For all these abominations the men of the land have done, who were before you, and thus the land is defiled, lest the land vomit you out also when you defile it, as it vomited out the nations that were before you. For whoever commits any of these abominations, the person who commits them shall be cut off from among their people. Amnon's cousin, Jonadab, who in verse 3 is called a very crafty man, devised a scheme to call for Tamar and have a setting alone with Amnon in his presence, in his house, and he raped her. And with all of the desire that he had for her before, he had as much or more against her as soon as it was over. and he sent her away. David is the father of both of these individuals. What would David do? What should David have done? We've already read what David should have done. He should have made sure that Amnon was cut off from among the people and marked, and that people knew when this happens, you cannot continue in your previous existence. This is unacceptable. This cannot happen. What did David do? Verse 21. When King David heard all these things, he was very angry. That's it. You read for more. It's not there. He was very angry. Contrary to Mosaic law, he did not send Amnon away, despite the fact that we know that he had knowledge of it. He was very angry. You see, David tolerated Amnon's evil deed. And in tolerating evil, David gave place to evil to continue. In tolerating evil, he gave place to evil. And this would prove to be one of David's biggest mistakes. Let's move on. 2 Samuel 13, let's talk about Absalom. Once again, a half-brother to Amnon. In response to Amnon's rape of Tamar, Absalom plots for 2 years in how he is going to kill Amnon. Once again, that sin had not been addressed as it should have been addressed in law. And all the while, there is no response from King David. Absalom devises a scheme to get his own, to get Amnon away from the king. And in 2 Samuel 13, verse starting in 28, reads, "Now Absalom had commanded his servant, saying, 'Watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant.'" Verse 29, "So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded, killed him. And then all the king's sons arose, and each got on his mule and fled." Well, then Absalom fled to his grandfather, the king of Geshur. Why would he do that? Why would he flee? Well, Genesis 9:6, obviously, well before the time of this, written well before the time, and they would have had access to this. Genesis 9:6, "Whoever sheds man's blood by man, his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God, he made man." Numbers 35:33, "So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land. And no atonement can be made for the land, for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it." What did David do in response? Absalom has killed his brother and fled. What was David's response? Verse 39 tells us the king longed to go to Absalom. After some time, after a period of 3 years, he just wanted to see him again. He just wanted him back. This murder demanded a death sentence for Absalom, and King David never gave it. Another instruction given to God's people, Deuteronomy 16, 18 through 20. "You shall appoint judges and officers in all your gates, which the Lord your God gives you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe, for the bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. David, at best, showed partiality. So let me ask you a question. How much do you love your family? Let me ask you another question. How much do you hate evil? The two questions are similar. But until you can explain how much you hate evil, you might be allowing too much flexibility into your children's actions. How much do you love your family? How much do you hate evil? David had a big problem in answering those two questions, comparing them side by side. Next point. Bottom line, David did not discipline his children. No one enjoys being disciplined when they've been shows that they've been wrong or when they find out they've been wrong. But it is critical for a young person to know that his parents care about his behavior. And the way that he thinks and the way that he acts really is important to him. Proverbs 3:12 says, "For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights." Amnon, David's son, in violating Tamar, does not appear that David did anything other than get mad about it. Absalom appears to demonstrate, as we'll continue to see in just a moment, appears to demonstrate no humility whatsoever, and it goes from there. But in demonstrating no humility, demonstrates a lack of discipline and a lack of instruction by where he was in his life. We're told that Absalom was a very handsome man. And I don't know about y'all, but it doesn't. The people that I've been around that receive a lot of compliments about their looks, it doesn't take many of that for them to remember it. 2 Samuel 14, 25-26. "Now in all Israel, there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him." Listen to this part. I had missed this up until this point. Verse 26, "And when he cut the hair of his head at the end of every year," he cut it because it was heavy on him, "when he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels according to the king's standard." He was so vain to the point he would weigh his hair at the end of every year. A father may not be able to solve such vanity and pride, but it must be addressed at an early age. And don't tell me that someone like that with that kind of pride and vanity only demonstrates it for the very first time once they're old enough to leave home. It came up and was not addressed. David allowed error and resulting hard feelings to fester entirely too long. In 2 Samuel 14, we see again the account. Absalom has fled to Geshur. And after 3 years, the king is longing to see his son again, as we mentioned a minute ago. Well, through a scheme, Joab, the head of David's army, is granted permission to go to Geshur and bring Absalom back to Jerusalem. And after 2 years following this event, he's back in Jerusalem for 2 more years. He still hasn't seen the king's face. Once again, my point that we're working on here, David allowed error and resulting hard feelings to fester. It has now been 5 years since the murder of Amnon, and David has said nothing to him other than just come home. Verse 30. Absalom requests twice through Joab to be brought to see David without success. So Absalom sends his servants to get Joab's attention. And he torches Joab's barley field. Well, that got his attention. So we're beginning to see some more character traits about this individual. Verse 32. Through Joab, Absalom sends word to the king. Why have I come from Geshur? It would have been better for me there still. Listen to this part. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face, but if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me. He knew. I asked the question a while ago, why did he flee? After he killed his brother, why did he leave? Why did he flee? He expected justice. He knew what he had done. 5 years later, he finally says, are you going to do it or not? 5 years. I've heard of children screaming for attention or begging for discipline in their own way. Absalom himself even knows what's supposed to happen to him. But David would not deal with this rebellious son. Verse 33. He came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed him. One of the jobs of the king was to administer justice. However, David many times did not, and it appears that he hoped that time would make the problem go away. But with this rebellious son, time would not solve the problem at hand, and in fact, it got much worse. As we stated earlier, when he gave a place, when he didn't confront evil, he gave a place to evil. He gave a home to evil. Once again, I'm a junior parent in training here, and I know that dealing with certain problems can be unpleasant. But David put off dealing with his rebellious son, and as we'll continue to see, that only made things even worse. 2 Samuel chapter 15. We'll read 1 through 4. You notice and you'll recall that a moment ago, there were two numbers that we looked at, number of years. There was 3 years that passed in Geshur, and then there were two more years that passed, so a total of 5 years from the time that he had committed murder. In all those 5 years, nothing had happened. That was nothing compared to what we're about to read. 2 Samuel 15, 1 through 4. Actually, we'll read a little bit further than that. After this had happened, that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was, whenever anyone had a lawsuit, came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, what city are you from? And he'd say, your servant is from such and such tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you. Moreover, Absalom would say, oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice. And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Now it came to pass after 40 years, that Absalom said to the king, please, let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to the Lord. Verse 8. For your servant took a vow while I was in Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the Lord said to him, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. Verse 10. Then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribe of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, and then you shall say, Absalom reigns in Hebron. Verse 11. And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Israel, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Galonite, David's counselor, from his city in Galo, where he where he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number. Verse 13. Now a messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. So David said to all his servants who were with him in Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape Absalom. 40 years. Do you mean to tell me that in 40 years David hadn't heard of what Absalom was up to? Once again, David refused to deal with this rebellious son as it grew and grew in front of him to a point he could not have possibly completely had no knowledge. Do you think the course of action of ignoring a problem will work? If you ignore evil, does it go away? You be the judge. Then in 2 Samuel 16, Absalom, it's not over yet, continuing on in his rebellion and self-proclaimed kingship under the coaching of an advisor, takes 10 of David's concubines in broad daylight. And it reads, so that in 2 Samuel 16:22, so they pitched a tent for Absalom on the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. If you refuse to deal with evil, no matter how close to home it originates, it will not go away. This truth applies to a lot more than just family dealings. Unfortunately, there's a great similarity. Happened again. 1 Kings chapter 1. Speaking of Adonijah, another son. Adonijah presumed that he would be the next king. And obvious similarities. We know that David went on to proclaim that Solomon would be the next king, but at this time Adonijah presumed that he would be. 1 Kings 1, 5. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him, just as his brother had done. Verse 6. And his father had not rebuked him at any time by saying, why have you done so? He was also very good looking. His mother had borne him after Absalom. Different mother, but later in time is, I believe, what it's saying there. The statement again I want to review. And his father had not rebuked him at any time by saying, why have you done so? Some presumptions and some of the things that I've said tonight have probably been made. But when you come to this statement, it's pretty telling that the biblical record records David hadn't said anything to him about why are you doing what you're doing. Had not confronted him, had not dealt with him. When is the correct time to teach a child? My answer is the obvious. It's when he's a child. Proverbs 29:15-17 reads, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame on his mother. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increases, but the righteous will see their fall. Righteous will see their fall. Correct your son and he'll give you rest. Yes, he will give you delight to your soul. I've heard it stated similar terms that a child who lives without parental discipline is doubly cheated. First, he's being taught to be self-centered. Secondly, he is subconsciously learning his parents are not genuinely concerned about him at all. Parents who really love their children provide the necessary discipline to cause them to grow into a well-adjusted adult life. You would be very hard-pressed to take that same term and call David's sons well-adjusted adults. My last major point is, another problem cannot be denied as is demonstrated in the lives both of David and his son Solomon, who reigned after he did. In areas where David set the precedent of going beyond or in contradiction to God's instruction, where David went a little beyond, Solomon went way beyond. Speaking once again, we've talked about this a couple times. Speaking of back in Deuteronomy 17, speaking of the kings that were going to come, an instruction given to those kings reads, "But he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away," as we already looked at. "Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself." Now, I think the case could be made. There's basically three things that are brought up here. One is horses, tools for warfare. One is wives, and another is wealth. I think the case could be made for what I said, where David stretched, Solomon bolted and broke and run. For the horses and for the wealth, even though God was involved and granted some of that wealth. But let's look at the wives. 2 Samuel 5:13, we already read through several of the wives, but David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem than he had after he had come from Hebron. We're not given a final number that I've found so far. But he was not supposed to do that. Solomon, we read in 1 Kings 11, 700 wives and 300 concubines. Way beyond. We asked the question earlier, what kind of a father can you be to a few children? What kind of a husband can you be to one wife? I would hate to even make a guess at how many children Solomon had. The point is made. David is known for his personal relationship with God. Perhaps the best trait of David is that he continually returned to God when he erred, even if it was months and sometimes years later. However, with children, you only have one shot. David faced many difficult situations as a father that none of us hopefully will ever face. I'm confident that some of those situations he faced were because he did not fulfill God's instruction. Deuteronomy 6:6-9, we read already. "But in these words I command you today in your heart, you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you raise up." That's what they need to see, is God's instruction. Similar point brought out in Ephesians. "You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." David became consumed with other things and he let his children down. We must not follow that pattern. Nothing must become so all-consuming that we fail our children. We only have one chance. So ask the question, are you teaching your kids today? And are you teaching your kids daily? Well, this has not been a lesson to teach about the basics of salvation, if there's any here that do not know that. It's one of the most important lessons that you'll ever learn. And God has given us that information, what we have to do to be saved. This lesson has been about accountability. And we're clearly told that a judgment day is coming for all. We will be accountable for our deeds. God will not let sin slide by. What we see in David, that God does love us and he wants us to turn to him. David made huge mistakes, but was approved of God because he turned back to God. The question tonight now is, have you done what God has commanded you? If there's anything that we can do to assist you in becoming right with God, do so this time if you'll come forward as we stand and sing.
Whatever is worthy.